Welcome to Adventures of Captain Manicorn. This is episode 16. 16, guys. In this one, we're going to address a top video that just went viral, if you will. I got my co-host here, Sandra.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, I'm Jamie, aka Captain Manicorn.
We have something kind of different we're doing today. And instead of going a little bit into the stories of travel, we had a video that just went viral. And there was a little bit of controversy, to say the least. So we thought we would make a podcast kind of addressing some of the questions, some of the concerns, some of the underlying reasons why we put it out. Everything everybody may want to know.
Yeah, it's pretty much the whole post was essentially, you know, 4 years ago, we left America and we haven't been back 4.5 years. And when we were in America, we had an event company and production, and we set up events for 5K festivals and inflatable runs, and we had a family business, and it was fantastic. And we were just about breaking even, and I went to Norway, and Sandra's back working, doing the books, cleaning up the financial stuff, if you will, and I'm playing hooky, obviously. And I was in Norway, and I called Sandra, and I said, I'm not coming home. I feel good here. I don't like our life there. I don't like the business. I don't like the what we're doing. I'm unhappy. I said, the craziest thing about what we're doing is we're working for 6 months to make enough money to go spend the other 6 months doing what we love. So I said, half the year you're doing something you don't want to do, and the other half of the year you're enjoying life, but you just know that you have to go back to doing something you don't want to do. In Norway, I'd had enough. I was like, no, I don't want to go back to doing something I don't love. Sandra, are you willing to like quit your life, pack a bag, grab freedom, and just move to Norway? And I left it like that. And what did you do?
I mean, that's not exactly what you said. You pretty much said, I'm not coming home.
I said that too?
Yeah. I mean, you said most of those things, but the preface of everything was, I'm not coming home.
Yeah. What went through your head?
I mean, there was obviously a million questions, but the one underlying question, what everybody wants to know is, how are we going to make money? We just had this business. We have all a ranch full of things. What do you mean just pack everything up, yeah, right? So there's obviously a lot going through my head.
And?
I mean, I'm here.
What's the question? What's the question when you asked me what? How are we going to make money? And what was my response?
We'll figure it out. We've got credit cards. We've got savings. We'll just go through those and figure it out along the way. But but you didn't say all this in this viral post. Now, the words on the post, it starts with a photo of Jamie, and it's a prison photo. And the top, it says, they told me 8 out of 10 inmates return back to prison within 5 years. Then it cuts to a series of extreme sport clips and said, that's why I fled America.
Extreme sports is what we're talking about. Paramotoring, space jumping, wingsuiting, skydiving, just all the air sports.
All the things we've been doing traveling. Clips from our travels. And it said, that's why I fled America, where the sports I love to do aren't illegal. Yeah. To countries to do. And I mean, it just blew up. I mean, we're talking about
millions of views
yeah, and thousands of comments ranging from loving us to hating us. And we'll address, you know, the hater stuff in a little bit.
Yeah, because I read every comment on our networks. Every morning I wake up and I go through all the comments, and I either have two choices. One, somebody's engaging with something positive or constructive criticism, or they took the time to say something meaningful. And then there's the other people that are like, I didn't know you could leave America as a felon. I didn't, you know, that's not what you went to prison for. You know, I think I read one this morning that said you were like a sports murderer. You know, I was like, you don't go to, you know, these sports aren't illegal. You must be a sports murderer or something like that. I'm just like, okay. So,
I mean, the underlying question that I heard a lot was, you know, wait, so why did you go to prison? Did you go to prison for sports? And I think that's a good place to start, is the number one question that people want to know and don't know is, why did you go to prison?
Why? Okay, so why did I go to prison? I mean, I think it was a sport. I think tweaking is a sport. Like, I was twacked out. So I was committing crimes. I was living in Colorado Springs. I had some guns. I was doing some hood rat shit with my friends. And we got arrested in a parking lot. And they found the 3 firearms in my truck. But then what they didn't find was the meth and the scale and my syringe from when I was shooting up and all that. So I actually got arrested in Colorado Springs for the possession of firearms. And actually, it was breaking and entering as well, because we did. We broke into a little storage unit and we had to try to get a shovel because I had got my truck stuck in the mud. No shit. I was stuck in the mud. Damn, I get stuck a lot. I could still see it getting stuck. And so we had broken into this little worker shed. And I guess one of the people in the building must have called the cops. Cops showed up. And we were good for a while. And then they were going to charge us with the break and entering. So they're going to tow my vehicle. And when they went to tow the vehicle, they moved one of the blankets in the back. And there was some fully automatic firearms back there. And they arrested me. And I went to county for a month in Colorado Springs. And then they said that I had my case had been dismissed by the state. And it was at that time that the feds had pulled me over to the federal system in Colorado. And I learned that a felon in possession of a firearm is actually a federal offense. So it's a little bit different in the state system. You know, the judges, you know, they have a lot of control, but in the federal system, there's this, these called the sentencing guidelines. And essentially for your criminal history, you're down one column, and then the crime going on horizontal line would be the recommended sentence range. So it's usually like a 12 month. So it's a 48 to 60 month sentence or 60 to 72. So it's always like a year that the judge has the control to pick your sentencing. So I had like, I mean, my whole, obviously, you know, my family was doing everything in their power. They were writing letters of recommendations. Friends were, right, saying, you know, I was on drugs. I was making poor decisions and blah, 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 blah. You know, he's really a good kid. He's had a hard upbringing, you know, but he's genuinely a good person. And we went to court and the judge, he said, you know, I don't believe that you are a good person. I don't believe that you're going to stop. And I think that you need the maximum sentence. So the district attorney had even recommended like 18 to 22 months for me. And then this was like a judge who was filling in for the normal judge and had read it. And they were talking about trying to give me like a RICO charges because we had possession of counterfeit $100 bills. We had possession of stolen mail. So we had all kinds of different things. So they wanted to originally charge it as a RICO. So we got all that brought down. District attorney was like, all right, you know, let's put him in serious drug rehab. You know, two years should be a good sentence. And then this judge, I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do 2 years. That's not terrible. You know, nothing in my mind had changed. I was still doing hood rat shit. So judge looks at me and he goes, I'm giving you, you know, what was it 48? I'm giving you 5 years, whatever that 60 month sentence. So I just froze. Like, I don't know what to do. You know, like in that moment, my entire life changed. 2 years is nothing. I'd been in group homes. I'd been in counties. I'd been in shelters. I've been in homeless shelters. Like, so I've been in the system for a lot of these different things. But then all of a sudden this judge is like six, you know, 5 year sentence. And it was 5 years for the guns and 5 years of the possession of stolen mail running concurrently, at least. But that's not even the kicker. The kicker was I had 9 warrants in other states, right? California, Nevada, Utah. I was wanted out there because I had got arrested for different things and I didn't go to any of the court dates. So now I'm in prison, but I've still got like these, you know, 4 or 5 serious cases out there against me. Some drugs, some, you know, other guns, some other things, you know, they're just different things. And now all of a sudden I'm in prison and, you know, I'm looking at 5 years. You guys can't even fathom what that is at home. Like I'm saying the numbers and you're thinking you're going from free. You're going from terrorizing. I'm smoking meth. I'm out there just raging. To sitting in a prison cell, knowing I'm not getting out for 5 years. And actually, that's when all the tattoos really started. I had actually given up on life at that point. I had the pentagram was one of the ones I actually got in county. Yeah. Yeah. And I accepted it, you know, like,
why'd you get the pentagram on your neck?
Why do I have a pentagram on my neck is because I wanted to prove that I would never get a normal job. It was my stance. It was my never. It was my decision. Something in there. You know, obviously I'm broken. I'm in a lot of pain. I hate the world. You know, this was, you know, like a couple months in. Yeah. And so I was like, I'll never work another job. And it was like my commitment to that life of, you know, crime and being an outlaw. And I was like, I'll never work at McDonald's and that will never happen again. And I said, one day this pentagram is going to make me famous. I said this when I first got it. I said, this pentagram will make me famous. It's because you will not forget the guy with this huge red pentagram on his throat. You know, so obviously I might've got lucky on that one, but you know, I think you don't even notice it. So I'm sitting in prison and, this is a different world. I'm now learning what racism is, like true racism, like you hate me because I'm white and I hate you because you're black. I don't, I like you, you're brown. I like you, you're Chinese, or, you know, different color. And you're learning that there's this segregate system inside of this prison. And, you know, I'm in the beginning, I'm hanging out with black people, Mexicans. I don't really care, guys. I'll hang out with anybody if you entertain me or catch my attention long enough to move the conversation along. And then it was soon after that, I started having problems with the whites. And, you know, they're very racist. You can't hang out with them. You know, obviously using the word nigger, right? It's like a fucking, you can't hang out with them. You can't hang out with the hamsters, you know, and the blacks are, you know, it's the same thing. There's just fucking hate and this racism in there. And I'm learning about it. And the whites are telling me you can't hang out with him. You know, you can't eat, drink, or smoke. And they're telling you all these rules. And I'm like, I don't understand, guys. So if we riot tomorrow and this guy's coming at us, you know, you have to pick, right? So it's better not to be friends with somebody that you might have to kill tomorrow. Like, crazy mentality. Yeah. So obviously I had a lot of problems with white people. In the beginning, I was boxing them because I didn't understand the system, the rules. And like, I didn't understand why child molesters, like people that were raping children, were allowed to sit with us like in the same room. So I would start, you know, I would look for outlets to become violent. And that, you know, so if you can imagine my passion for air sports, passion for life. Now my passion was to hurt people in there because I was mad at the world. I wanted to blow the world up. I hated the world. You know what I mean? Like, look, I hated organized religion. I hated my parents. I fucking hated everybody. I just hated you. Just hated. And then obviously all that changed with therapy. And that's moving the story quite along. But at some point in there, it went from wanting to inflict pain, you know, extract blood from people, to wanting to help puppies. You know what I mean? Like... So it's there's a part in this story where we can get into that another day of what changed and what went down. But people don't know this about me. Like, everybody who meets me now thinks I'm like this super happy, positive guy. And internally, you know, I think of it like the movie The Beautiful Mind, you know, with Russell Crowe, and his was his insanity. I've got this little gangster sitting here and he wants to do hood rat shit and he wants to break laws and be an outlaw like Jesse James. Like, that's my dreams. You know, I love that lifestyle. But then there's this other guy over here who has to, you know, keep that at bay. And sometimes that the message, the voice is louder than my ability to control myself. And I'm never going to dispute that with anybody. I make plenty of poor decisions, but I feel that 95% of the time I make good decisions. So I don't think I'm a bad person. I think I'm a good person who does bad things sometimes. And we're not going to talk about that anymore. If you want to know more about the bad things that I do,
you have to reach out. Sponsor.
Yeah, you got to be a monthly sponsor because we actually post all that rowdy shit in the secret content because some of you people out there are really sensitive. And
can we'll get our Instagram deleted. Let's be honest. Yeah, we have two strikes, Jamie.
We have two strikes because you guys reported shit that I said once.
So now all the good stuff has to go into our monthly sponsors section because people can't handle it.
Great seamless sponsor input there, Sandra. Like, you're natural.
That was a great sponsor commercial.
So
that was a lot to go over, a little bit of why you went in there and what you were like when you were in there. But...
I mean, you can insert a photo right now of me and one of my friends when I was in there at my max. I was 240 pounds of solid fucking brick.
No, you were beefcake. You came out of prison. I met you. I was like, look at this guy.
Dude,
I look
shredded,
good.
Like 8-pack. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, just like,
I mean, what happened? You look like a homeless Jesus now.
Like a homeless Jesus now.
So that's a great breakdown of what you did, what your life was like before prison, what you were like, what was like in prison. And if anyone wants to know a little bit more about this, we also have our previous podcast where Jamie really dived more into prison. You can go back and listen to that one. I think it was episode 3, Why Jamie Went to Prison.
But not only that, I still haven't addressed things about prison. It's a time in my life where I don't really like telling the stories from inside prison. They're dark. They're not good for me to talk about sometimes, and sometimes they are. So we could do another podcast. Like, I thought of some things that were like the scariest moments. I thought I was going to die in prison, or when I got falsely charged while I was in there and the prison turned against me. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of crazy stuff that I'd like to talk to people and you guys about at home, and we can put that together. But I'm not a fan of talking about my old life and what I did wrong because I believe we should move forward. So every time we do these, I want to make sure, you know, let's get the next one, get everybody's input and see what they want to know. Because I don't want to keep doing this forever. I already think about this shit every day as it is. Last thing I do is keep thinking about all the negative stuff in there.
Let's go to something a little bit happier. So did you...
Sorry, that was dark.
Moving on. The doom and gloom. Well, did you do extreme sports before prison?
Before prison, I did do extreme sports, actually. I had a good dad and my mom. Of all their flaws, the one thing they gave me was a dirt bike when I was 4 years old. So I've been doing extreme sports. I mean, obviously tried baseball, football. I didn't have the attention span for any of that stuff. But I love riding motocross and I loved, that kind of lifestyle. So actually when I was, I had got out of one of the group homes. I was living in Boys Town in Tribuco Hills. And it's like, it's a home. There's like six homes on top of a mountain and there's like kids in each home. And then like foster parents, actually I'm still friends with one of them, Travis. And, so I lived there and then I had convinced my family to let me out of the group home, that I was a better person, that I was going to go to a trade school. So I had this whole lie that I had like conceived, that I was like, no, I want to go to trade school. I want to weld and do all this. So they actually pulled me out of that group home, took me back to my grandparents' house. And then all shit went loose. You know, I went to a new high school. I was in a public high school.
Still doing sports?
So that's where it gets interesting. So I had a cousin, Vicky, who's on my grandfather's side. She introduced me to these things. It was like a Boy Scouts, right? What was the name? It doesn't matter the name. It was like a Boy Scout. Oh, God, but it's important. Okay. So anyways, I'll remember the name. I can't remember the name of it. But essentially, there's like Boy Scouts, and then there's one step up. And I had met these guys. And they were different. They were all like good kids, good families, like whatever. So they took me, invited me out. This guy, David, took me out and he took me to this place called Stony Point, which is in Chatsworth. I'm from Santa Fe Valley. And I said, if you would, baby. So we go to Chatsworth and he sets up he told me to go rent these climbing shoes. So then he said, I show up. I have no idea what's going on. I have these like little rubber shoes, leather shoes. I got them from like Sport Chalet. I rented them. And he sets up a rope on the boulder at the bottom and, hooks me up with a harness and all this. And growing up, I had always loved rock hopping, like running through rivers, running through rocks, like up to dams and down, like it was my favorite thing to do. Now, all of a sudden, I'm tied in with a rope going up to the top of the rock and this guy holding me on the other end of this. And he's, you have to build this trust, this communication with this, this guy, right? His name was David. He was awesome. And that was the day that my life changed. That literally was if I look back at my whole life, like prison sucked. Yeah. But that wasn't a definitive like change in my life. That just set me back. There was before rock climbing and after rock climbing. Right. See, because when life's fucked up at home and when life's fucked up at school, you have nowhere to go. So like you can't escape. Like it's dark. It's dark in your mind. You go home. You're not stoked. You're just reminded how much you hate something. And then all of a sudden there was this climbing. And when I would like stick my hand into my chalk bag, you rub your hands together and you're thinking about what you're about to do. And then you embrace the wall and you're climbing and it could be hard. It could be easy, but there's nothing else that matters in that moment. There's nothing else that exists. That was the day that I found sports and I found out what this meant, it changed. That's what changed my whole life because it didn't matter anymore what was wrong. It didn't matter if I had problems with my parents. None of that mattered. All that mattered is that next move, an absolute focus, precision, control over your mind, which was something so far-fetched for me. Remember, I'm being diagnosed bipolar, I'm ADHD, I'm in special learning classes, right? So like I'm a disaster, like medically, educationally, I'm a disaster. But when I could get on this wall, like everything changed. I became somebody else, I would go back after climbing, you go back to your friends and your party and you're doing all these different things. But then on the weekends, I would go with this other group of people who were climbers. They were all older. There was not a lot of young climbers back then. So they would just go into the mountains, into Big Bear or up to Tuolumne Meadows or something like that. It didn't matter. We'd go climbing and I was with like 40-year-olds. They had a different mindset. They had careers, they had these different things, but they also went out into the nature. And they would challenge me because I'm a cocky, arrogant kid. And they would put me on into situations that where I would humble myself and where I would learn where my personal fears were. And climbing did this for me. Climbing did this. So when I got arrested, right, I definitely wasn't doing sports. Okay. But when I got out, I was now healthy. So I was doing mixed martial arts. Right. And I was doing climbing. So these were the two pinnacle points for me. And then all of a sudden we found this one day, I finally did it. I saw that there was a tandem operation near.
Skydiving,
yeah. And I always wanted to do it. So I took myself to the airport. I paid for a tandem by myself. And I went and skydived. And something like the climbing, but that I obviously didn't, you know, wasn't powerful enough to keep me out of trouble. I now had found something that just triggered my mind. I was flying, I was falling through the air, you know, at 120 miles an hour. This dude strapped to the back of you, you're a serious meat missile, right? You're just like, whoa, this is insane. You know, I'm jumping out of 182, you know, you got the ocean on one side. It changed my life again. That was the second point. So now you got rock climbing, okay, back to meth and craziness, and then obviously to prison, and then prison to mixed martial arts and fighting in a cage, to all of a sudden this sport where you're throwing yourself willingly out of an airplane with this bag on your back. Okay, it's full of parachutes and cords and straps and doodles, and you pull things and things explode, and you know, like you're skydiving, and then there's a group of people afterwards that you hang out, and you're like, wow, we skydived, it was so cool, man, we jumped out of the sky for 60 seconds, and you're like, cool, I'm gonna invest everything I have into this, to throwing myself out of a plane. I don't know why it sounded like a great idea at the time, right? You're like, so my brother came, and I'm like, it was his birthday. I'm like, you've got to do this. It was July, right? I'm like, you got to do this, dude. You've got to see what I mean. It was better than selling crack to somebody, right? Like when I would smoke crack with people, you're like, you know, you're going to get fucked up, right? And then when you tell somebody like my brother, you're like, hey, we're going to go jump out of this airplane. I know I'm going to fuck him up, right? So Cody's going up in the plane, and he's super cocky. He's talking, you know, he rides, you know, motocross, and he's a cool kid. Yeah, I know 100%. And I just remember I'm sitting in the back like, yeah, man, woo. And all of a sudden, I remember the tandem instructor opens the 182 door, right? You know, you pop the lock, and then you slide it back. And I just remember my brother with his face like, yeah. And he looks out the window, and he goes, oh. And I'm like, I'm positive I have that image, because we were doing tandem videos, right? And Cody was like, oh. And I was like, yeah, motherfucker, I'm jumping. And you jump out, and it was contagious. It was a fire, you know. It was, again, it was something during that 60 seconds that I didn't have to think about prison, you know, the things I had done, you know, all the, you know, who I was before. So now I found this new release that, you know, it didn't matter for the 23 hours, 59 minutes of the rest of the day could absolutely suck, because that 60 seconds, I was going to do something that I was in control of and something that I truly love. And that was worth it. And, you know, the thing about skydiving is you can go again. And you can go again, and you can go again. But what people don't know is that I was poor as a mofo when I started getting into skydiving. And I had to save up for my first one, right? Because we were doing like media we were trying to do media. So it was like this payless job, right? So we had to save up. I'd go do my AFF one. I jumped, and then I had to wait 30 days to save up money again to do two. And then I had to save up, you know, money again. And it took me like 5 or 6 months of doing this to get through my AFF. And I would wait to like the last minute to not have to do the recurrency for the, you know, the AFF section of it. And then something happened with Color Fun Fest. We made a bunch of money at the first Phoenix. And all I did was put down like $2,000. And I said, I want to finish my AFF. And this was Dallas, Texas. Now that we were living in LA when we started the license. And that was just the catapult. And I met, you know, I think actually you guys all know him as Party Till Impact, but his actual name's Gabe, and he was my buddy. And Gabe was from Dallas, Texas, and he was fucking insane back then as well. But him and I were really good friends. So he'd have all these crazy ideas. Like, he was teaching me what paramotors were. He was teaching me what speedwings were. When I took my base course, Gabe drove out there with me and was doing rollovers on a speedwing, you know, 8 years ago off the Prime Bridge, you know, doing my second, like my third jump, like, you know, two ways, and I'm landing in trees and shit. So that's who, you know, brought me into all of this. So now I know how to base jump. Obviously, I know what a speed wing is. I know what a paramotor is.
And you have this passion now that's supposed to keep you out of prison, right? That's what the sports were for you, and the activities to keep you, all that energy you have at bay, so that the devils don't come creeping in, right?
I mean, he's always there. He's always there. It's not creeping in.
It's louder. It's louder. You can't hear anything when you're falling out of the air, right? It's so loud. You can't hear the demons.
No, he's even there. He's next to me right now. If this camera moved over there, there'd be somebody sitting there right now. I just choose not to acknowledge him. It's awkward. He's always the elephant in the room.
Are you off your meds again? Okay, so let's talk about how you then discovered air sports. And now this new passion is what's supposed to make your life better and essentially keep you out of prison, right?
Well, I got into all these air sports, right? Because I wanted to wingsuit base jump. That was it. I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about anything else that I had saw free flying. I didn't care about nothing. I didn't care about the actual base jumping off buildings. I didn't care about any of that. I wanted to wingsuit base jump. So my actual instructor was Matt Blank, my very first day from Paris, California. And he's asking my brother, because my brother went to the AFF with me. And he's like, what are you here for? I don't remember what Cody said. And he goes, what are you here for? I said, I'm going to jump off a mountain with a wingsuit. He's like, whoa, whoa. If you guys know Matt Blank, he's like, whoa, that's a great idea. But let's figure out how we're going to get there and put milestones together so we can do it. I love your enthusiasm, but let's get jumping out of the airplane first, right? Mm-hmm. So that's Matt Blank. That's my impression. I haven't talked in a while, so I forget what he sounds like. But that's what I picture in my mind. And actually, I just got into base jumping with like 70 jumps. So there was
not recommended.
Tom Aiello was my coach. I wrote him an email and
usually you want to have at least a few hundred.
But I was going base jumping. Like I had already understood how the canopy worked. I'm not a stupid boy. So I got the concept of it.
So after you meet Matt, things progress pretty quickly. And in the second half of the video that went viral, it's a very bold statement that says, so I fled America to do air sports in countries where it's not illegal.
Yeah.
Right. More or less. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's not illegal to do skydiving, paragliding, speed flying, or even paramotoring. So let's talk a little bit about where that piece of the content came from. Because what happened soon after how you learned how to base jump?
Yeah, so two different things. Air sports illegal in America. That's the first thing that matters. So you have to remember that in America, we're so happy, if I can't call it as it is. So everybody wants to... You know, they want to put up a fence. They want to put up security because they don't want people to get hurt on their property. Because what happens is Americans will like, look, you could break into someone's house, fall into their kitchen, you know, cut yourself with a knife in their kitchen, and then you could sue the house owner that you were burglarizing, and it would get in front of a judge, and, you know, it would have merit. Right. And I think people have even lost that one before. So when I got out of the base jumping course, I was eager to jump. So actually Gabe and I went to some wind turbines and okay, we broke in. Sure. We picked the locks. Sure. There's no reason I can't say this because everybody's been sentenced to this. So sure. Hold on. I might have learned how to pick locks back then. So we go up, we climb up, we leave our gear bags at the bottom. We climb to the top of the turbine. We're all up there. It was JD, Gabe, and I, and I jump first, and then JD goes, and then Gabe goes. We land, and when we land, the farmer who owned the property came up to us like, "What are y'all doing out here?" You know what I mean? And we were like, whoa, whoa, I took over. I was like, whoa, 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 I apologize. We didn't break or steal anything. We actually just jumped off the turbine. And I had a parachute in my hand, like I'm walking back to our car, you know? And he's like, whoa, what are you guys doing? I was like, yeah, man, so check it out. We climbed to the top of that tower up there and we just ran off of it and we jumped. And we deployed these canopies. And we're landing and we're leaving right now. We shut everything back up. He's like, oh, that's amazing. I got to tell you, I called the cops. I thought somebody was burglarizing this thing. He's like, you guys better get going. I was like, can you just call him back and tell him it was a mistake? And he's like, you better just get going. I was like, okay. So we jump in my car. I'm driving. We go down. And as soon as we pull out to the main road, surrounded on all sides by cops. And JD and Gabe had talked to them first. I don't know what was said, what wasn't said. I do, but fuck you. So next thing you know, I talked to the cops. He's like, do you want to explain what happened? I said, look, man, I don't know what to tell you. I was sleeping in the car. And he's like, yeah, it's not what your buddy said. And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure I was a smart ass. And I was like, well, does it really matter what I say? And he goes, no. And I said, then fuck you, you know? And they put me in the cop car. Something along those lines. Yeah.
What did you tell them was in the trunk?
Well, they're like, well, what's in the trunk? And I said, cocaine and dead hookers. Yeah, I was deep already, and I have a problem with authority. I don't like authority. I don't like being told what to do. I knew I was going to jail. It was New Year's Eve. My parents had drove from Los Angeles to Texas to all have New Year's together, and I can't even call Sandra because it was, you know, I can't even get a hold of her to let her know, and we're going to jail now. And I'm like, man. So basically, long story short, we get out of jail. the next day, Sandra picks us up, and she had actually, the funny story, she had tracked us down because I didn't report back. She actually hacked into my phone through like whatever it's called, Find My Phone. And she could see that I was in a jail. So now she's calling and we're trying, but they had separated Gabe, me and JD in different cells. And I'm trying to communicate to everybody to like shut your mouths, you know, cause I'm an ex-con. So that was in that moment, like I was abruptly refreshed why I can't do what normal people do. You see, Gabe and JD, regardless of what we did or didn't do, they could afford this. You know, like even if they got convicted of the worst case scenario of burglary into this turban, right? That's a charge they're going to get probation. I knew that that for me, this could be a prison sentence, you know, a burglary, right? So I refused to say that I was there. Even through the whole thing, I just said, no, I wasn't there. I was, you know, I was sleeping. I didn't do anything. And I talked to Gabe and to JD. We all communicated and said, you know, look, you guys want to confess to this, whatever. You have the right. I'm not here to stop you. Just keep my name out your mouth. And they did. So no quarrels how it all went down. And I love these guys. Well, JD's dead. He killed himself. But we all know that I love Gabe. So Gabe takes off after this and he goes to Europe and he's like, fuck America. And I'm like, yeah, man, I love America. Da, 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 da. So soon, you know, a couple of years later of doing these sports, I kept going to Norway. And it was then that the only time I felt free was when I would go to like Vecco or I'd go to Norway and I'd be around the Norwegians. Like I felt more at home out there because of the way they look at sports, their passion for it, you know, like the whole vibe out there.
How much base jumping can you do in America? How many places? And now you base jump. You're like, woo, I base jump. You get arrested. You're like, okay, I shouldn't do this illegally. What are your options now?
Yeah. So I'm obviously wingsuiting and drop the drop zone all the time, you know, so you can do that. You can't base jump off really anything. There's only one place that's legal, a bridge, which is the Prine Bridge in Idaho. And there's another place, Moab, and that's all earth, you know. And the thing about those
low is cliffs.
Low cliffs, some high ones, whatever, but it doesn't matter. There's, you can wingsuit even out there. But it's one location in 50 states. Yeah. When you come to Norway, to Europe, to, you know, Africa, to Asia, you can do these sports in every country, if not every city, you know, every, you know, the Euro. So we spent the first couple of years, you know, so what happened, I went on a trip in 2019. I had went to Vecco. It was my first time going, I'm sorry, in 2016, I had went to Vecco or to Heli Boogie. In 2016, I went to Heli Boogie to learn to base jump, to do wingsuit base jumping. Okay. When I went there, I was insecure about, you know, things. I got in some fights with the Norwegians, did some super epic jumps with some legends, and actually even then outcasted by the Americans a little bit for being obnoxious. I was hyper, you know, I definitely was destructive with some of the Norwegians. But it was the next morning that the Norwegians, you know, blood on our faces, crazy. You know, we had gone to war the night before, came over and invited me to road trip with them. The ones I had fought with, right? So the Americans, I'm outcast. I'm crazy. I'm out of control. You can't act like that. Da, da, da. And I'm like, fuck you. You know, that's probably, you know, why some people don't like me. You can't do that. Fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, it's what it says across my back for a reason, guys. Like, it's not because I'm an angel all the time. You're going to tell me I can't do something. And I'm going to say, fuck you.
But can you say fuck you in America when the cops tell you you can't do it?
No, they throw me in the back of the cop car every time. Like, even though I'm excited, like we're yelling out, like, you know, like, woo, we're just excited or something. You've been with me. You know, mm-hmm. It's not normal.
There's been multiple instances, even times where Jamie and I, in the beginning of our relationship, we went on a cruise together, just a short 3 or 4 day cruise, California to Mexico. And we woke up actually 2 o'clock in the morning, banging on the door. I was naked sleeping and we have to get dressed awkwardly. And there are these,
Officers
got come into the room and
with dogs.
They had found out that there was a felon on board. Mm-hmm. And then they essentially harassed us and checked the room, searched all of our stuff, made a huge mess and left. And I'm sitting there now it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, what just happened? And that's just one example of the harassment that we went through because Jamie does have a, does
but I
have
deserve, a, yeah, no, but listen, I deserve it, right? Like I was a criminal. I did bad things, bad enough things where they put me in prison for 5 years. Yeah. So it comes with the territory. I did the crime, right? Like I did the time it will always be over my head, and that's fine. Like, it could be worse. You could have killed somebody. I could have been, you know, I could have been charged for killing somebody and got like a 7-year sentence or 12-year sentence. Okay. And I could have that, you know, in my mind all the time, but I don't, luckily. I have crimes that were like, you know, moving and firing, you know, trafficking firearms, things like this. Right. So I don't have victims per se in my crime. There are victims. There's a lot of victims in my wake, but they're not, I didn't go to prison for hurting somebody or, you know, doing something dangerous with other people, right? It was self-inflicted. It was self-sabotage. So I've seen hell, man. Like, you guys don't understand. Like, I've seen humans kill other humans because of the color of their skin, because the shot caller told this person that this had to happen, but this person fears the repercussion of this group of people so bad that he's willing to risk more time to dismember, disfigure people, right? Because this is the politics. This is the way the real world works. You know, caged animals, you know, sitting in cells for fucking months, you know, you're losing your mind. I've seen evil. I've seen a bad day. You know what I mean? I've had a bad day. So when you guys out here think that your financial problems, that you're marital, you're female or male or whatever that is, I don't give a fuck what it is. I think that, you know, that you're looking at a little bit of time, your drug addiction, your wife's cheating on you. Trust me when I tell you that is nothing. You know, you're safe. You know, unless you're at war or in battle right now somewhere in the world, or getting, you know, Turkey's having earthquakes, for the most part, you're safe. You know, no one's trying to kill you today. It's not what it's really like, you know, in the real world, in the real streets and in prison and dark places, these people that are there are getting released. Those bad things don't go away. So the statistic in my fucking post, 8 out of 10 people eventually commit a crime again, end up back in jail again, end up back in prison again. Right. And we house more prisons in America than we do school systems. We're breeding racism. We're breeding poverty. We're breeding repetitivism of these inmates getting out, having kids, kids being fucked, then the kids be doing fuck stuff. And next thing, they're repeating the system. And this is what our government wants. This is what the world wants. Dumb people are easy to control. Criminals, poverty are easy to control, to entice, give them a little something for free. Right? So this is the system that I'm born into now. This is my home. This fucking evil pit. Right? This is what I'm drawn to. 80% statistically of my mentality should have me back here. And 100% of the time that I feel I deserve to be back there. But when I'm traveling, when I'm seeing the world, when I'm meeting people, when I'm doing these things, I have a great day every day, because it's not evil. No one's trying to kill me today, right? I'm out here free. I don't care if money's hard to get. I don't care if the sports are illegal. You're a victim to your own circumstance. Overcome your own adversity. I decided to move from America because my life that I wanted to live, I could fulfill dreams and have a shot at doing something that very few people in the world will even risk trying. And I can only do that because I don't go back to my home. If I go home, I can't do this. So I choose to be out here. I choose to follow my dreams. And I want to help pioneer, discover more places to fly. People are trapped in their head that this is a fly site. This is what it is. This is what it is. We get into our vehicle. We drive to random locations. We trace wind. We use our knowledge and we open up sites, whether it's wingsuiting, whether it's speed flying, whether it's paragliding, whether it's soaring. I want to go where the map stops, because I've already been down the road to darkness as far as any human should go. Now I want to see what the other side of that looks like. And I'm making a living at this. It's very slow. It's very difficult. It's very hard. I don't recommend it for everybody unless you have what it takes to follow through with something. But that's why we made that post. We truly are excited about what we do. Every day I wake up with one goal: to follow my dreams, to have an adventure, to not know the outcome. That's what life's about. Because life's like a box of chocolate. What you're going to get.
I mean, you do know what you're going to get if you're doing air sports in the U.S.
Yeah, that's true.
And not even just wingsuit base jumping, right? Because that's obviously very difficult in the U.S. I mean, you have the best, probably the best place to wingsuit base jump, maybe Yosemite, right?
No, but it's a straight cliff. You wouldn't want to. No, the best places is Europe, Switzerland.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. Yeah. Northwest. Those boys are crushing it.
Or let's talk about speed flying, right, guys? So speed flying is like paragliding, smaller wing. There are here in Europe or other places of the world, countless gondolas that you can take up to the top of the mountain and fly down, right? Because sometimes, you know, if you want to fly, you don't want to hike 3, 4, 5 hours. A gondola is nice. There are tons of places in Europe. You know how many places in America where it's legal for you to take a gondola up and speed fly down?
Zero. There's one secret spot in Utah that's like people can go do a little. That's where I learned actually speed ride my first time. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know it, you know, and if you don't, too bad. But there's nowhere to go. There used to be in Montana when we would go out there, you could take smaller wings off. But now it's even illegal to do speed fly there.
Speed flying is obviously a little more dangerous and people get hurt and then they sue. So in America, they've outlawed it everywhere.
Yeah. So in that post, everybody's like, oh, it's not illegal to do these sports. Okay. First off, it's illegal to base jump off buildings. let's see. The only bridge.
Which you almost got arrested for coming off a building too, Jimmy.
Base, the acronym, building. Yeah.
Now you're on someone's building.
Yeah, there's no legal building in America that you can jump off of. Okay, A, antenna. Like, think about that. What antenna do you know of that's legal to climb, whether it's AM, FM, whatever antenna it is, okay, that you can climb off and jump off in America? Base, S, span, right? Bridge. There's one bridge, the Prime Bridge, okay? And the second one is Bridge Day, right, where you can jump off that bridge, but it's only open for one other day. So S, one spot, one day, you know, the second spot. E, Earth. Okay, you can jump off in Moab. You can jump off a lot of objects in Utah, or you know, there's a lot of objects you can jump off of, right? So, but legally. So, but the only place is then you want a wingsuit based jump. Now, the only acronym is E Earth, right? So you have to go to somewhere where you can jump, and you need a 6 second rock drop, right? The average rock drop. So there's beautiful places in the Northwest, right? There's beautiful places in Moab that you can get to, but they're also short starts and they're a little bit more dangerous. There are options in America, but they're very few, and the accessibility to get good at something does not there. Even the best pilots and the best wingsuiters and the best athletes in the world that come from America do their training in Europe. Why? Because there's gondolas, there's helicopters that will take you to the top. You can take a chairlift to the top and speed fly 10, 11 times a day. You could do 4 or 5 wingsuit jumps in a day. You can go to Norway and jump for months at a time off of cliffs. And there's a taxi that takes you to the trail. And then they even have helicopters on some events, right? So if you want to get good at something, you have to go to where they do it. People that study martial arts that want to learn Muay Thai, they go to Thailand, right? You learn, you know, these things where they originate or where they're... You can do them and progress because you want to be around other people that are great at them too. If you're the best, if I ever was the best person in any one of these sports, then I always, you know, want to go somewhere else. I want to be around people that are better than me. And it's easy to be a big fish in America and, you know, and whatever, be part of the cool kid club or not, or be the outcast or whatever it may be. I didn't want that. I wanted to go to places where every day I could look up and be challenged with something that I had to learn that would progress my knowledge, that would keep me alive. And for me, it was 2016, learning to wingsuit base jump, Norway, changed my mind, snapped it. I felt more at home out of America, right? That's the truth. So now I can legally do these things. So I basically, from 2016 until 2019, I had built the color run and I had built the inflatable run and I had made a fuck ton of money. You know, let's just say I made 3, but I lost 4. You know, but I had made some good investments along the way and I bought some property and I'd done some smart stuff. I set myself up for success. But 2019, you know, I was not in a good spot. I was hurting from work. I was literally in pain from lifting those inflatables and breaking it down, setting it up. And I hated it. I hated it. It didn't matter how much money we were making. It didn't matter. I hated what I was doing for a living. But I knew that when I went to Norway in 2019 and I was part of VECO, I was part of Team One Call and everybody's having a great, I met Lee Hart and I'm playing with all the guys from Norway from the drop zone out there. They did it again. It was round 2. It was the first time that changed my life for air sports was, Liz Botten, at Heli Boogie in 2016. And now in VECO, during, you know, Extreme Sports Week in 2019, that's when I called you, bringing it full circle, you know, and I said, I'm not coming home. And you agreed to come out and help me build this. I was pretty selfish of me. You know, I think I was at that point, I was willing to change everything. If you didn't come, I think I would have stayed. That's where I was at. I was so, you know me, I push the button all the time. What's step five, right? I reset. And I have this philosophy that, you know, it's these five steps, right? One, you know, you have to dream. Step two, you have to make a decision. Step three, you have to put the research in. Step four, you have to put repetition until you can see the pattern. And, you know, it's a chart and a graph. You can study what works, what doesn't. And then I have this step five that I invented that says reset. If you don't like where your life is at, reset. It's not a partial reset. It's a full reset. So when I called Sandra, you know, I was willing. I was in a bad spot. I was willing to end my relationship with her. I was willing to leave freedom. I was willing to leave everything. I wasn't coming home. I was running. And I had got out, and I don't think that anything would have brought me back. I think I knew I was out. You know what I mean? Like, I did it. You know, like something, you know, like you did it. You are afraid, you're scared, but not me. I did step five. I got out, and I was reinforced that my life would be better out there. You know, I was having problems with my mom and dad at the time. I'm having problems with Cody, and we're all, you know, the whole family's not, you know, seeing eye to eye anymore. My mom's going through cancer. Like, it was a rough time. And I'm just like, yo, I'm out, you know, selfish, whatever. I call it what you will. You know, I did what I did. And for me, it was the most important decision I've ever made, you know, because every day since then, Sandra decided to come out. Thank God she did. She's my best friend. You're my best friend. I love you like more than, you know, than the rising of the sun and setting of the sun, you know, and how much I love my sunrise sunsets. I love seeing you, you know, but, you know, it's like being in prison. You make a definitive choice to not do bad stuff anymore, not to hurt people anymore. And I lived with, and I do that, right? It's the same thing when I left America. It was the same decision. I'm making a conscious decision not to go back. I'm not wanted. I have no crimes against me. I could go back. There's no problems. I have my property. I have a Harleys. I have Humvees. I have every toy, dirt bikes. I have tractors. I have a 40-acre ranch, trucks full of production equipment, festival stuff. And I refuse to go back to deal with any of it because it doesn't move me one step closer to my dream. It takes me one step back. And being here with you every day, we move together in synchronism, one step closer towards our dream. You know, and who knows if it's to fly a parachute in every country of the world. Who gives a fuck, guys? But when you find an opportunity to follow your dreams and you have somebody with you who's willing to sacrifice everything as well to follow that same dream, whether it's her dream or not, whether it's a combined dream or whether it's my dream, you know, it doesn't matter. That's love. And that's the kind of support, you know, that I'm lucky. That's what separates me from everybody else, that I have somebody that's willing to go everywhere with me through thick and thin and allows me to be me. Because trust me, I don't have a filter. Trust me, I'm a lot nicer online than I am in real life. So, you know, we're doing rad shit, man. And, we're running. Yeah, it's true. We're running from America. We're running from the thought of going back to prison. We're running from the thought of, you know, working a job that we don't want. We're running from our family, from having problems and conflict, you know, conflictions that we don't want to deal with anymore, you know, because life's too short. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. They say these things for a reason, because at the end, it's the love, you know, it's going to be you and me as we're dying together, you know, on our deathbeds or whatever happens. It's going to be, you know, you and I dealing with each other. And we're fortunate we have, you know, this life together moving forward. So now that nobody can stop us. I've already seen hell. I've seen evil. It's been rubbed in my face. I've seen beauty, right? I've captured that feeling of freedom with you, traveling, seeing what we want, moving when we want, doing what we want. Yeah, we have something bigger than us now. It's in front of me. I work towards this every day, that feeling of consistently having that feeling. So there's no more highs and no more lows, that there's just this trend going up for the rest of my life. You know, sure, there's things that suck, but I know that in anything, because I'm working step four of my own plan is repetition, and I have to keep doing it. Sometimes I get setbacks, but even a stock, a trend, no matter what it is, still has a forward motion that can't be stopped. Time, it's time. You can't stop time. Right. So whether it's up or down, we have to be aware that that time is still running out, and we have to rebound from those lows at a quicker rate, because as we get older, those lows can take you down. Your health, you could be overweight. You got medications. Your significant one love dies. You know, all these things are going to start happening as you get older. You know, when you're a child, everything is good. school's good, friends are good, education is good, life, love, you have all these things ahead of you. Yeah. And then when you get these different things, it's just time running out. And I feel that in my mind. I feel the time every day. I can feel it. It's not like it's not subconscious on my mind some days. I literally think about this every day. I'm like, time is running out. That was one day. I only have so many left. If I live to be old, great. If I die from doing some of these sports, great. It doesn't matter because my trend, what does that trend look like on that stock? Right? If I go and I make it to 60 years old, but my body doesn't work anymore because of all the stuff, the lifestyle I've lived, and that trend starts going down because I'm in pain or whatever it is, what's happening, right? Then that's a bad investment. Yeah, you wouldn't want to invest in something on a downtrend, right? Everything is investing in life on an uptrend. So our goal is to keep this trend going up, right? Because people will invest in that, you'll invest into that, you'll reinvest into that, right? So that's what we do. We keep this trend going up and we just keep battling it. And nothing stops you because you have consciousness, devotion. People don't even know what that word means anymore. Like, I'm devoted to you. I'm devoted to my dogs. I'm devoted to our life. Like, I don't wake up with something else on my mind tomorrow, or who do I want to go be with, or, you know, oh, do I want these dogs, or do I want to be in this lifestyle? Do I want to be in the van? Oh, it's hard. Military's getting, shut the fuck up. Like, that's me, homies. I'm doing this 24/7, 7 days a week. I don't take a break. I don't have days off. There is no checkout time. You know, there's no leaving. I'm here with her, with you, with the dogs, making these videos, doing all this shit, sharing this journey. And we're making it up every day because there's what we are now and who we are now. But we have who we want to be tomorrow. And sometimes that who we want to be tomorrow takes many, many days, years, decades to accomplish. But you get one step closer every day. So it's not about air sports. It's not about any of these different things. It's about freedom. I'm willing to risk everything. I'm willing to leave my family. I was willing to leave you. I was willing to leave everything for a sense of freedom. Freedom not to go back to prison because it scares me. Not because it was dangerous. I do dangerous well. It's my middle name. But because of how easy it was. Because I see why people fall back into that. I see why people end up back in prison. It's easy. They give you 3 hot meals. You have a bed. You don't need money. You don't need to work. You could be lazy and easy. And if you're willing to hurt people, you could be higher up in there. You know, I did well. So, you know, that's too easy. I don't want that. If I end up back in prison, you know, and I slipped out of my ways, then this whole air sports, you, everything like this doesn't matter to me anymore. Because you and these air sports and this world record and this traveling and the dogs is what keeps me from letting my buddy over here have control of the wheel. Right now, I have control. I'm conscious. I'm clear-headed. Yeah, I fucked up. I made a lot of mistakes. And I'm going to make more mistakes because we're human. That's what we do. We make mistakes and we learn from it and we progress. If you do something and you don't like how it makes you feel, then you change and you try to better yourself a little bit. Yeah. If you do something and it didn't make you feel bad, then you probably adapt that way. I never want to hurt people. I don't want to hurt you. I deal with my anger. I'm always trying to work on my anger. I'm a very angry person. I get to 10 very quickly. So consciously, these sports help me. These sports saved my life. Rock climbing with David saved my life. Motocross with my dad saved my life. You know, mixed martial arts, MMA saved my life. Skydiving saved my life. Every one time I've gotten to these sports, it saved my life because I was so close to going the other way. And I was reminded and I was gifted this. And now I refuse to waste the opportunity. Now I'm going full stop. That's where we're going every country in the world. I'm going to try to wingsuit out of an airplane down K2. I'm going all in. My dreams have to get bigger. They have to. Not because I'm not content, but because I have the ability to dream and I refuse to waste that.
I dropped the mic, but I don't want to break it.
It's a big mic.
It's a big mic. Well, that was a lot. That was good, Ben. That's some good stuff in there.
I don't know what to say right now.
You know, you guys can't really see because of the it's a microphone, but you know, you got teary-eyed there a couple of times. That's when I know you're really, you know, passionate about what you're talking about and you mean it. You know, mostly when you're talking about how much you love me and how much I mean to you and that I'm number one. And so next time I do something wrong or you're mad at me, you just remember. I'll take that whole section out.
Baby,
I'll take that whole section out next time you're mad at me and it'll be like, remember, babe, you love me.
Call me on a good day today.
No, but I think that sufficiently explains that viral video. I think anybody who watched it, who maybe did leave a hater comment, and then they go back and listen to this, they're probably going to feel like a douchebag.
No, don't think that way. I don't really care. Just remember this, guys. The more you hate on my comment, on my post, the more you hate on my life, the more you hate on the things I've done, it's called an engagement rate. And since we make a living at social networks and influencing and working with brands and sponsorships, the more that you guys hate on our stuff, it raises our engagement levels. And so right now I'm at like 3-star hotels, but I'm hoping that more people hate on my story, because if we can get our engagement rate up, I truly think that we can get into some 5-star hotels. Is that cringy?
I was going to use that word. Yes, it's a little cringy.
Yeah, but am I lying?
No, actually the by putting stuff out at a little bit of behind the scenes stuff, we've been putting out content that's a little bit more controversial by talking about prison and addiction. And it does cause a little bit of flurry, and people do get stirred up in the comments. And because of that, we see those do even better. So we're doing even more of them because.
Let me just say one thing. This is we're going here. I don't know.
Where are we going?
Wait. Listen, people all the time accuse me and say the shit that we've done wrong. Look, you guys don't understand. I'm a gangster. If you think you know something I've done wrong, then I haven't done my job, because I don't go around everybody telling people our business, financial. I don't tell people any of this different stuff. So if you think that you're talking to somebody and that they're giving you good gossip, that's what it is, because I don't go around talking about this shit. Mm-hmm. So just remember that no rumors out there are true unless it's so far-fetched and so insane, then I'll claim it.
I mean, I'm sure there's a couple that are true-ish.
We have puppies in the room again. there's puppies in the room.
Weren't you just talking about how in the beginning you went from prison to puppy?
Oh yeah, went from prison to puppy. We love our puppy. Oh yes. Oh yes. Rawr. All right, you guys heard it. That's a good one. Podcast 16. We're ending it with puppies from prison in the beginning to puppies in the end. I wasn't joking. Oh, we're getting a check. What are you doing? What? This is going crazy.
You want another puppy?
No more puppies. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. This is episode 16.
And remember, if you enjoyed this episode, then why not click subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, follow our journey live on Instagram or Facebook, or even just tell a friend. Every little action helps so much and is hugely appreciated. And if you want to hear more of the behind the scenes, the really nitty gritty stuff that we can't post or talk about, make sure you become a monthly sponsor where you automatically get up to 2,000 free entries into our Insta360 X3 giveaway, Dream Steaks. That mouthful commercial.
Okay. Until next week, stay safe. Stay rad. No, what was
it? Stay alive.
Okay. Until next week. Oh, it doesn't matter. Do rad shit. This is your captain. Signing off.